Sunday marks the new season of AMC's Better Call Saul, which spun off the wildly popular Breaking Bad and stars Chicago's own Bob Odenkirk. Let's take a peek into the new season.
You're going to call yourself Saul Goodman.
I'm already calling myself Saul Goodman. We've talked about this. The Skells have been buying my phones. Sure as shooting, sooner or later, every last one of them is going to find themselves in the back of a squad car. How do I get them to call Jimmy McGill? I don't. I stay Saul Goodman. They call the guy they already know. I thought I was wasting a year of my life. It wasn't a waste. It was for this. This is it.
When did you decide?
Just now. Just back there. Just boom. It just hit me. This is the way, Kim. It's gonna work.
All right. Better Call Saul's new season debuts over two nights starting this Sunday on AMC. And Chicago's Bob Odenkirk joins us tonight. Bob, great to have you on the show again.
Very good to talk to you.
Five seasons in, and you continue to make this dark character of Jimmy McGill likable.
Well, I give a lot of credit to the writers because they wrote a spirited fellow who is very entertaining to watch. He says a lot of funny things, and frankly, he's very often he's entertaining himself. He's smiling at his own antics.
Yeah,
and I think people are audiences. It's kind of infectious, his joy at what he's doing, and even though he's very often being duplicitous or using someone or in some way doing something like a con, which can which is ethically questionable. He's having so much fun doing it, and he's so inspired at his plans that it's very hard not to like a person who's trying to win, even if they're trying to win in a deceitful manner.
Well, I don't even want to say it's like watching a car crash, because you want to see what's going on and what's happening. You know what he's doing is kind of devious, but it just makes you, I think, want more, right?
It is so. He's a car crash. He's a human... He's a human accident that is happening, and he's running down the road, smashing into things, and we're all sitting back and enjoying it.
Yeah.
But the really, truly, the moments where he's truly a bad guy, I think, are the moments where you can see him have an option to do something right or be a more human person, and he makes the choice to manipulate or hurt someone, and those don't come all the time. Come along once in a while. The episode two that just played has a moment in it that it's very unjustified from what you can tell, except if you know the character and if you know where he's going. But otherwise, there's no justification for the way he turns on those two guys who run the copier company and give him a job, offer him a job, and then he turns and tells them they were clowns to believe what he had to say. He was a good guy.
Yes.
It was amazing what a good person they invented Saul out of. He was a very likable Chicagoan from Cicero, good Catholic boy,
right?
who had some bad. He had some instincts that went the wrong way. And he had some talents that were easily manipulated into the wrong, unethical, plots and plans. But he was a good guy, and he's becoming a not good guy.
Well, we're talking to Chicago's own Bob Odenkirk, and there's much more ahead on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you here on 720 WGN, and we're talking to Chicago's own Bob Odenkirk about the fifth season premiere of AMC's Better Call Saul. So comedy isn't something that came after college for you, Bob. You were writing sketches in your early teens while in high school here.
Yeah, well, mostly I started in junior high at Jefferson Junior High School in Naperville.
Yeah.
And I had a couple teachers there who encouraged me to write sketch comedy pieces that were informational as part of my projects in, I believe that was seventh grade.
Okay.
And that was really the start for me. Those teachers, I think I wrote four or five sketches over the course of a year and we performed them for the class. It got a lot of good laughs.
Yeah.
And got some great grades and got a lot of encouragement from the teachers for that. There's no doubt that that was a an important thing for me that made me feel like this was a skill I might have. It still took a long time for me. When you live in Chicago, when you live in Naperville, and you live in the outskirts of a bigger city, you know, the idea of show business is so far away from where you live.
And
It took me a long, long time to just imagine that I could actually, that it was legitimate for me to try.
Well, and even being in the burbs, I mean, you listened to Chicago radio growing up here. Who were some of your influences? Who were some of the guys you listened to growing up?
Well, look, Steve Dahl is absolutely number one influence for me. If you're talking Chicago radio,
sure.
I think I related to his anarchic sense of humor, his cynicism, and his sarcasm, which Steve is from California, but he's got a very Chicago, I mean, there's a reason he's been on the air in Chicago for most of his career.
Oh, no, he's got a Chicago way about him.
Yeah, there's a very Chicago point of view on the world, which is, you know, skeptical and very down to earth. And maybe even at times a little mean, but always to good ends.
Yeah, I agree.
To make you laugh.
Yeah.
And to tear down the people who are full of themselves.
Oh man, we had so many radio greats here in Chicago as well. But Bozo, what about Bozo? I can't ask a question on a station with the letters WGN without Bob Bell.
Bob Bell, who played Bozo when I was a kid, and even through my teen years. He was one of the most naturally funny. I put him next to Bill Murray as the funniest Chicagoan ever.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're both naturally, easily, without trying, so likably funny. And I mean, that's just to be envied and treasured, the point of view of Bob Bell and that voice he had and the same of... I love Bill Murray.
Yeah,
he's just the best.
I've heard you do a little Bob Bell voice before. You're damn close, man. It's almost like he's right there.
Cookie, it was a little bit like a drunk guy, a little bit, a guy with a stuffed up nose.
It is true. But, you know, what was cool is he was entertaining kids, but he was entertaining every adult in that room and on the air as well, right?
Listen, any adult watching, without being remotely scatological, remotely crude, it was his point of view, and it was his good-natured, you know, kind of ironic stance. He was a genius, and I sure wish he'd done some, you know, sketch comedy or any kind of adult kind of performance or comedy. I don't know what his story was. I'll always be curious about what kind of guy he actually was and what he aspired to in life, because from my point of view, he could have been anything. He could have been a movie star and you know, you never know with the Chicagoan whether, you know, sometimes people make the choice to just go, that's okay. I like living in Chicago and I like being around my kids and raising my family and being a dad, and I don't need to spend my whole life or give over my whole life to some career. And I really I love Bob Bell, and if only I could be touched by some of the natural humor of those great Chicagoans, that would be the gift of all time.
Yeah, and two great ones you mentioned there. And Monty Python was a big influence for you, too.
Yeah, Monty Python on Channel 11. They played it on Channel 11.
Yes,
but also
did.
Channel 11 played... I mean, Python was like my guiding light. Really, it was. I mean, the smartness of it, the absurdity of it, the silliness of it. Adults doing material that was that silly was like, spoke to my heart and made me happy in a deep, deep way. But also Channel 11 played other British shows that
did.
Influenced me, like The Goodies.
Yep.
And Dave Allen at Large.
Yeah.
Yes. And I don't know who played Marty Feldman's comedy machine. I think that was on Network. But that was some of the Python guys helped with that, I believe. And so that British comedy that came through Channel 11 really got into my head. The Two Ronnies, watched The Two Ronnies when I was young, and they played it there on Channel 11. So, you know, that really got into my head and helped me develop the voice that I had in comedy.
So you have all that and all that influence that you grew up with. Then you're at Second City. You're studying. Yeah. You're studying with Del Close. You meet Robert Smigel there. Then you start writing for Saturday Night Live. I mean, this is the pattern. Yeah. The journey of your career is always amazing to me.
It's a weird journey. You know, before all that, you know, the whole scene in Chicago was different than it is now. There were far fewer classes. And Second City really only had these, they weren't very structured classes. So I actually took classes at a place called the Players Workshop of Second City, which had a more structured program that took about a year and a half to complete and felt like it really got you somewhere. And I met Robert Smigel there. But I also did comedy at Southern Illinois University with my friend Tim Thomas. I did a show called The Primetime Special, and we had a lot of fun. I did a show that was kind of like Mr. Show, which I later did on HBO, which kind of a semi-themed sketch show.
I love that show. Brilliant. Nothing short of brilliant.
Well, thank you. Well, thanks. I had such freedom at Mr. Show. HBO let us do whatever we wanted, and they actually truly didn't care if anybody watched as long as people felt they should watch, as long as it created a ruckus.
Well, think about
as
this.
As long as it made people... Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Think about this, though. When the show went on the air, compared to today, you know, you said there was limited places to do a lot of this stuff. There was limited networks or that would even air something like this. That was groundbreaking in and of itself, being on HBO.
Oh, absolutely. There were not many alternate places to do a show, to do an original show. We were very lucky, the right executives at the right time, and to some extent, HBO was not yet successful. And that can be a very good thing, because until they had The Sopranos and Sex and the City, they didn't have sort of success that they were trying to duplicate. There was nothing to duplicate. They didn't have any success. We came in a corner of the market and got to just do our thing for 4 years.
I was geeking out watching some of the shows. A pre-tape call-in show was probably still my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Still my favorite.
Yeah, there's some great sketches. I mean, really, the thing that drove me in writing and creating that show was great sketch work. I love Bob and Ray and, of course, Python. And I loved Peter Cook and Dudley Moore and their work. I just love great sketches. And to me, Mr. Show, when we did it right, we did, number one, we did a couple really great sketches, like the audition, pre-tape call-in show, young people and their companions, the story of Everest, lie detector,
Commercials of the Future was another a great one. Change for a Dollar was another favorite.
Yeah. A lot of really just solid sketches with great ideas, well executed, beginning, middle, and end, and kind of not leaning too much on the moment. Just you could do them now and you'd get the same laughs. You know, you'd get just as good a reaction from an audience. I think the Burgundy Loaf is a great one. The restaurant. The restaurant that's so fancy that it doesn't have toilets is just...
Oh, it's classic. Darling. No, it's classic. But now here you are in HBO, and they're kind of giving you the freedom to do what you want. Did you ever, you know, when you sat down with David Cross, did you ever have an argument over a sketch in the writer's room about the content or the joke or the sketch itself? I mean, or did everything kind of flow its way?
The arguments were this. The HBO gave us total freedom. They asked us to cut one line, which is so awful and crude that I can't even say it to you on the radio.
I know what it is.
Because you'd have to bleep it out.
Yeah.
It was, you know, But we liked being provocative and edgy.
Yeah.
But we always asked ourselves, who are we actually making fun of with this sketch? So if we were playing somebody who was mentally dim, we would ask ourselves, yeah, but we don't want to actually make fun of people who have mental issues. Mm-hmm. That's not funny, and it's not okay. So are we sure that? Because we don't want to do that. So, and oftentimes, you know, when you do comedy, you do stuff that you talk about sex, maybe, or you talk about challenging things that provoke people that already get them sitting on the edge of their seat, which can turn into a laugh if you break it the right way, if you turn it the right way. But you have to ask yourself, who's being torn down with this? And make sure it's somebody or something that maybe deserves it and not somebody who doesn't deserve it. And then we did a lot of stuff that was kind of provocative, but boy, I don't know. It wasn't really critical of anything. It was just pointing out, I think, that people are pretty strange creatures. I mean, we did the black Ku Klux Klan leader in our first season, and it's really funny. You know, he's talking about it's the new KKK, and it's not about race anymore, and it's about all these hobbies. You can't help but laugh at how stupid and silly it is, but you also kind of go, why is this funny? What is this about? You know, I mean, and you can't really put your finger on it. It's just fun to take something and turn it that way. And at the same time, there's something that almost makes you go, oh, I actually think that could happen.
Well, and we're so worried about political correctness these days. We just need to laugh and do and watch. This is the type of stuff that we need, I think, just to make people laugh. This is it's all a joke. It's all for fun. And I think we've lost a little of that.
I think the one thing that irks me is if the piece that is upsetting you is advertised as comedy, is clearly set up as comedy, if it takes place in a comedy club, if it's in a comedy theatrical show, if a stand-up comedian is doing it on stage, then you have to recognize that everyone has, there's a basic agreement that this is not meant except as a provoker of laughter. And if it doesn't make you laugh, well, then they failed.
Yeah, right.
But it's not a polemic. It's not a person lecturing you.
Yeah.
The difficult part is when you get into things like Twitter, I think, really kind of people did things on Twitter before they figured out what Twitter meant to everyone else. They for some people, they said, oh, I see, it's a platform for my jokes. And that had not been established yet. And in the end, that's not what Twitter is. But I think a lot of comedians in particular thought, oh, what a perfect, it's just a stage for my comedy jokes.
Right.
But the thing is that isn't what had been established yet about what Twitter was. And so I think now we're finally, after all these years, getting closer to what Twitter is to other people. And that's what defines it, you know. But at the same time, I don't think it's fair to have a person go in a comedy club and see a comedian, and the comedian does provocative material, and then walk out and treat it like they went and saw a political speech.
Yeah, then their intention walking in there wasn't right. Yeah, then their intention walking in there wasn't right. Yeah. If you weren't going there to laugh, then you're in the wrong place.
Right, right. And you cannot laugh. That's for sure. That's up to you. Yeah. And if a comedian is not making people laugh, then he's failing. So if he's doing all kinds of rude, crude stuff and saying nasty things and you're not laughing, well, he's the loser in that interchange.
Absolutely.
But you can't take what's said in there and walk out and go, this person believes that, they spoke to me about it, they said that's what they believed. Comedy is a way of being honest, but it's a roundabout way of being honest. And if you really want to tell people what you think, well, go ahead and write an essay and put it in the paper. And,
sure.
And there's a million places for that as well.
Different forum.
Yeah.
Different forum.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it's been hard for everyone in the audience sometimes to figure out, and we have these like entirely new platforms, and we just haven't sorted out yet what we're doing on them yet. What we're all agreed is happening there.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
Well, great insight into all this, and I'm excited about the new season of Better Call Saul. It's a 2-night event starting Sunday at 9 Central, followed by a second new episode this Monday, with new episodes airing Monday nights at 9 on AMC. Great chat as always, Bob.
Very good. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Bob. All right. Much more ahead on 720 WGN.